podcast. Burning Platform, fired up by Nando's on cliffcentral.com.
Well, Justice, you're a very much in demand man at the moment. Mm. Wow. I see you on international news networks. I see you talking to virtually every major publication that has any credibility. And I see you delivering comments on all kinds of things, from student protests to budgets to everything else.
Yeah. Hey, it's a busy time. I think it's one of those things. I mean, we always think on this show that we'll never have anything to talk about. Today we're going to talk about happiness. Look at Mabale, huh? Isn't that nice?
You know that she look happy?
She looks happy. I mean, Pavin Gordhan, the whole of the past month, everyone's been saying, yeah, no, you know, we're going to be taxed. Oh, we're going to be taxed.
Yeah.
So personal income tax, everyone is saying, oh, it's going to go, what is it, 41%, 45% maybe. Oh, Mabale is just going to be taxed to death. And look at that smile. She's happy.
Because he didn't.
He didn't.
It's also because I found myself a wealthy man. That's the reason I'm smiling, Justice. I'm just going to put it out there.
Lucky. Isn't there a tax on husbands or partners?
There should be a husband or wife tax. That would be fun.
Something like that.
So let's just start with Pravin and the budget yesterday. There was quite a lot said. Obviously, this budget, there were huge and high expectations.
Mm.
But I think a lot of people are secretly quite relieved about where he's decided to increase income, and most especially where he's decided to cut back on expenditure.
Yes, I thought he was quite creative. I mean, who would have thought of a sugar tax?
Yeah, nice one.
You know, I mean, it's a nice one. It's one of those, it's, well, you know, who's really going to suffer from this? Maybe it's good for health. So it's a lovely little thing. So there have been inventive ways in which he managed to plug the hole that everyone was saying the South African budget has. That where's the money going to come from? Where's the money going? So the expectation was that he'd go for all of us. He'd go for corporates. He would essentially tinkle with tax, and that he might even go for a VAT increase. And that would have hit my mother, your mom, everyone gets hit with a VAT.
From the rich to the poor.
But then so does
a fuel lift. Really, if you think about it, because everything goes up if fuel goes up.
Yes, that's true. And that 30-cent fuel levy increase has that potential. But I think he's betting on the fact that, think about oil prices over the past year. They've plunged from more than $100 a barrel to, what is it, $30 at the moment. It's really gone down. So the increase is, in a way, offset by the cheapness of the oil price.
Well, we will be speaking to Tamsin Nell later on, a portfolio manager at Anchor Capital, about, and she works with Anthea Gardner. We'll talk to her about what the budget breakdown is for everybody in great detail.
Yeah,
so that'll be much more of a money discussion. But I think there were a couple of things he said that have huge political implications. The civil service, state-owned enterprises, what do we have to say about that stuff?
I think if you were to ask me what's my takeaway from this budget, I thought he did incredibly well on saying, okay, we go into this budget. The biggest thing we're facing is a ratings downgrade.
Yeah.
Everyone is talking about us going to junk status. That has massive implications for borrowing and so forth. And so he spoke to all of those things, but did he go far enough? Let's talk about a great subject for us here on the show. We talk a lot about SAA, because SAA...
Right.
Embodies all the problems that state-owned enterprises has. You have a board that doesn't work. You don't have a CEO. You don't have a COO. You don't have a chief financial officer. You don't have all these things. So what is needed there is someone to go in deep and say, we're going to fix this thing, or we're going to get rid of it and let someone who runs airlines run this airline. We're no longer going to pour money into this and so forth. So what does he do? I felt that he, instead of going there, of being brave, he says, well, we'll merge the boards of SA Express and SAA.
Yeah. And he did mention there are four airlines, and I had to rack my brain, but it's SAA properly.
Yeah, SAA Express.
There's SAA Express, SAA Airlink.
Airlink.
And then there's Mango.
Then there's Mango. So we are invested in four airlines.
Right.
So he spoke about the two. And then he says, and then we'll sell a minority stake basically to someone.
by the way, the EFF went crazy when that happened because they suddenly said privatization, which is a very dangerous word in this country because there are a lot of people who believe anything to do with privatization is a very bad idea.
So you have an ideological battle looming there. But earlier on at his press conference in the morning, he'd actually said, I didn't mention the P word.
Yeah.
And you know, there's been a long thing going on about, you know, private-public partnerships and so forth and so forth. So I don't think he actually went the whole hog and said, let's go privatization. For me, if I run British Airways, or I run Ethiopia Airways, or I run Comair, if I'm going to go to SAA and say I'm going to spend a lot of money buying a stake in your business, I want to be able to say, well, the first thing I'd like to do is get rid of people, change the way we work, we could serve better chicken or beef, and so forth and so forth. If that minority stake doesn't give people the kind of control that they need,
which it won't,
then there's a problem here.
Who's going to invest in, would you take, out of every 100 rand you earn, would you take 5 rand and put it into SAA, or would you put it somewhere else?
When you can't do the deep, deep restructuring that you need to do at that parastatal. So for me, it's, okay, you've said the right thing. But is it the right thing to do for SAA? Because SAA needs some serious work.
Yeah.
And then further on the parastatal, he didn't go to any others and say, you know what, so the threat is that you shape up or you know, we're going to get rid of you. Well, I mean, we know the ones that don't work. Mark Barnes was in Parliament the other day. That's the post office.
And I mean, he's just been slapped really hard by the public protector.
Exactly. So the key thing for me is there are 300 or so state-owned enterprises.
That many?
There are that many. I
heard him mention that they are responsible for 27% of the GDP.
Exactly. And you've got inside those SOEs, there are companies hidden inside them. So the number goes, some say, to 400 or so.
Good Lord.
So there's a lot of companies in there that we don't need, we shouldn't have. Some were started, and he said it in the speech, that, you know, some of them go back to apartheid days when, you know, we're sitting at the post office, let's start a little company to do this and to do that and
like,
so forth.
Like the arms manufacturer. That was built during apartheid, and we've never dismantled it.
We haven't dismantled it. And what else is still lurking around in its cupboard with a little company offshore and so forth and so forth. So there's all that. So I didn't feel like he actually went the whole hog and said, state-owned enterprises, they've been draining us of cash, we keep on bailing out. And he started right at the beginning of the speech. He said, people have told us what they want. What is it they don't want? Corruption and wastage, bailing out state-owned enterprises. But in the actual addressing of the issue, I didn't feel that he said, okay, it's time to stop bailing them out. It's time to, you know, there's a moratorium. I'm not giving you money. You have to go out and borrow money yourself. And if you don't, you can't return it on your life. So
none of these state-owned enterprises are getting a bailout?
Well, he's saying not. But
he's saying he's turning the taps right now.
Well, he's closing the tap. But to be honest, what happens when...
If the SABC
SABC comes along and says, we've run out of money.
They're not going to just let it fall down.
My biggest problem is that he didn't say, you know what, we're gonna sell you off to people who are going to have a board, who have their money in there and are going to say, you know what, I'm sorry, you can't just lose 500 million or 1 billion or 3 billion.
Yeah.
That is what Moody's and S&P and all the other guys were expecting to hear. So we've heard about one SOE, and that's SAA and SA Express. I mean, it's the same thing, really. But I didn't feel that on state-owned enterprises that he went deep enough, that he went far enough. And I think that's where, if you were to say how well did he do, I would say he did very, very well in one, finding money for the next year at least, where many of us didn't see where he'd find money. So we've got some relief, and maybe the tax hikes will come next year. But for now, he's found money in other little places, and that's a good thing. The other one is the big wage bill. The state essentially gave public sector wage workers a massive increase, 7%, plus benefits of about 3%. We had a little kitty of 65 million rand last year, and he wiped that off. Not him, Nhlanhla Nene and his colleagues in National Treasury basically were forced to do that. So for me, one of the things that hangs over this this budget is that he didn't give specifics about, we've got so many civil servants. So many of them have their jackets on the back of the chair and don't actually do much work. And this is how many we're going to get rid of. What he did was that we want to save, was it 25 billion rand every year over the next 3 years? And that is through procurement and so forth and so forth. So the question will remain, you know, are you going to continue with this massive bloated public service, or are you going to really cut? And I'm not sure that he's cutting. He is saying that, you know, if there's a opening come up, then you have to
freeze the position.
You have to freeze the position. You have to fight for it to be refilled and so forth. But I didn't think that he took the scalpel.
You imagine the pressure. There's got to be huge pressure politically on him.
There is massive pressure.
You know, because he's working for a party who really didn't cheer very much at his budget. and they're not happy that someone is in control who is not their benefactor.
Yeah.
But didn't he get a massive standing ovation at the end, barring the DA?
I think it's quite interesting that, you know, Pravin Gordhan flew economy class last week from Cape Town to Joburg. Last night, people were tweeting about the fact that he flew economy from Cape Town to Joburg. On Tuesday, I flew to Joburg. I flew Joburg to Cape Town. And I have to tell you, business class, there were two ministers in business class. And so one of the things for me is, how much political backing does he have to achieve all these things that he wants to achieve?
Yeah.
Is President Zuma and Gordon's cabinet colleagues, if he says, guys, we gotta lead by example, let's cut down, are the other guys going to do it, or are they going to turn around and say,
no, we're here to eat?
No.
You know,
they don't care.
And so you know you can't have a budget that is driven by one minister. It's got to have buy-in.
And if the average person in South Africa has to pay more for fuel, we have to pay a tax on this, a tax on that, a tax on the other. We've got our municipal taxes. We've got Eskom bills. We've got all these things that are weighing down on us. It means that maybe if we're lucky, we take 30 to 40% of what we earn home and we can actually use that.
Yeah.
Because that's the reality.
That's the reality.
When you add all the other things in, that's probably what we're all getting. Now, if we all have to take 30 to 40% seems to me that you could probably get a better deal in Angola. Or you could get, you know, there are lots of countries where you might get a better deal. But the fact is, if we're going to do it, then some government ministers need to also, you know, give up some perks.
It's not just coming to the party, though. It's also being seen to come to the party and to be saying, I'm with you on this one.
Other ministers, imagine them also flying coach.
That would be amazing to have ministers in economy class. Why is it? And I think this is where also just the pronouncements need to filter through to the way we work in general. So one of the things that the ministers will tell you is that, oh, you know, but the ministerial handbook, I don't book these things. My office will look at the ministerial handbook, and they'll book me in business class, and my bodyguards and my PA and so forth will go in, economy. Now, if that is the case, and if, you know, I can't go outside of the ministerial handbook, let's change the ministerial handbook and make sure that actually it flows with the times, it's congruent with the times. But no, that hasn't happened. So I think the political backing and the the show of political backing has to happen straight from President Zuma, Cyril Ramaphosa, the deputy president, and his cabinet colleagues. And you know, the deep cuts that have to be made, whether it's parties in parliament and so forth, he can't do it alone. And it can't be, oh, the finance minister, oh, he's such a nice guy.
Having said all of that, though, he is the most powerfully placed finance minister we've ever had.
He is incredibly powerfully placed. If you think about it, Pravin Gordhan, whatever one might say about this speech, has the trust of the business community, of the investor community.
Right.
He's got so many. With him came along a sense that, you know what, we've got a fighting chance to deal with the lack of growth, to deal with the ratings agencies and so forth and so forth. So if President Zuma, and you know, there's been rumors running around that, oh, you know, he's just using him, he's going to get rid of him in the next few weeks and so forth, and you get those sorts of rumors. If he does even dare to fire Pravin Gordhan next week, the week after, or the next 6 months, or the next year, can you imagine what happened to the rand on December 9, 2015?
This would be even worse.
It would be a picnic. What happened then would be a picnic compared to this. South Africa would get downgraded within a week. Our rand would be junk. We would go to 30 rand to the dollar. I mean, it would be absolute disaster. So I think any kind of thinking that, oh, you know, we'll deal with this guy would be quite a thing to contemplate.
Let's talk about something else that's going on at the moment, which is quite big news, and we're trying to.
Can I one last thing on the budget?
Oh, sure, of course.
I thought that you raised the issue of the applause and so forth. Can I just say, for the record, that I thought the applause for Nhlanhla Nene right at the end was quite something. Pravin, you know, there are two things. First, in his speech, in the written speech, there's nothing that says, I'm going to thank Nhlanhla Nene.
No.
He thanks Bongani Fuzile, all the other.
He doesn't thank Tom Moyane.
He doesn't thank
SARS.
Tom Moyane. He did thank the 14,000 employees at SARS, which I thought was fantastic.
Sorry, 13,999 of them.
And so he does that. Then he thanks Nhlanhla Nene, and people go ballistic, clapping.
They love that.
But I looked at the ones next to President Zuma, and they started clapping uproariously, and it was amazing. And then they said, oops. And they,
yeah, because he I'm sure he didn't clap.
So I thought that was quite fun.
Could be a sign that there are serious cracks here, which we've discussed already in previous podcasts of this one. So, Justice, what about what's going on the campuses? Because there's a huge amount of justifiable lack of patience with what's going on campus, but there's also a huge amount of violence, and this violence is worrying a lot of people who are on the side of the students, but who are starting to feel that this may actually just be a bunch of, you know, vandals who are just trying to find some kind of expression in university and are not particularly interested in making real change or in developing themselves on campus. They'd rather burn down a building or a painting or a statue or something and complain about something. I mean, how much of it is becoming problematic now in a very systemic sense?
I think if you look at the Wirtz Feast Must Fall movement, it's been, this violence is not new. Think about what happened after the victory on student fees, which is reflected in the budget yesterday. Those students went back to Wirtz. Then the Feast Must Fall movement at Wirtz basically crumpled within a week when it emerged that, oh, you know, the divisions between the sort of EFF leaning students and the Progressive
Sesco.
Youth Alliance, which is aligned to the ANC and so forth. Yeah. Then you had those fires burning through the night in late November, and the violence started then. And it's been going, it's been sort of bursting out at University of Pretoria. TUT was very bad. If you think of the violence last night at the Northwest University Mafeking campus, and look back in at November at UWC in the Cape at UCT, where two Jemmy buses were burned down, it's very similar. So there's been the underlying this whole roads must fall movement, fees must fall movement, there's been echoes of like, there's been a violent streak embedded in there. And now it's becoming almost wherever the movement or whatever.
Which is discrediting, the legitimate movement.
It is taking away a lot of their capital. A lot of people were, in fact, if you look at the Fees Must Fall movement, you had mothers, people saying, my kids are absolutely right about what's happening here. If a 10.5% increase comes along, how will I afford it? How will my neighbor afford it? And so forth. So there was a lot of fellow feeling, a lot of sympathy for the movement. I think that there is a huge concern now that what was, particularly on Fees Must Fall, what was a legitimate, admirable campaign has morphed into something else. And so for me, the key thing is when you have this sort of thing happening on campuses across the country, when you have what happened at University of Pretoria in particular, where you have racial, massive racial overtones to it, when you have AfriForum on the one hand and EFF Student Command on the other, and you're sitting there, you're watching this, and you're saying, well, these are young people. Do they actually have the experience, the vision to realize that there is a bigger that this is a big country that where we have a long history of racial animosity, where we need a solution that just doesn't say, oh, you know, whites must get off the UP campus or blacks must get off the UP campus.
It's so simplistic and so binary. And what worries me...
It's gone on to UFS and it's gone on to other campuses.
What worries me is there seems to be almost an anti... I don't want to simplify this too much and make the same mistakes students are, but it seems to me that there's this real harboring of a viciousness against the idea of a rainbow nation and of kind of non-racialism, and that people like Nelson Mandela are being vilified at the moment by people who are not prepared to read the history of our country and are making it up in their own heads to suit their own immediate political ambitions.
Well, I think the Fees Must Fall movement had a legitimate the fee freeze demand was a legitimate demand, which I think government was absolutely right to say, yes, we hear you and we're going to do something about it. I think though in our politics today and over the past 2 years, there's been first a questioning and now an all-out assault on the idea of what we achieved in 1994. All those arrangements are coming under pressure. I think we are going to see more of it. I don't think it's the end. Actually, it's not the end. I think we're right in the middle of it, but I think it's going to get more intense. The key thing is this. I agree with you. I think that the 1994 arrangements are coming under pressure. The idea that Nelson Mandela sold out keeps on being... I was amazed last night after you referred to when I went on CNN. It was all about, Nelson Mandela's compromise was built on black pain and so forth and so forth. No one stops and says, how far have we come since 1994?
And a version of history is being offered now which is not factually accurate. And people are making things up in order to have expedient points of view for the present, which take no recognition of the past into account.
Well, it also, to try and denigrate what was achieved in 1994, which took an incredible amount of vision.
And by the way, not offering for a second any alternative at the time. Because the only alternative at the time might have been a civil war.
Well, and I think one of the things, okay, for me, the key thing to what we're going through now is that where are the solutions to what we're going through except right,
this
to say,
must fall, this must fall, this must fall.
Yeah, and so this is where I'm battling to find new leadership, to find new ideas about, okay, this is where we find ourselves. Why do we find ourselves where we are? And how do we get to the next step? Because right now, it's a rush to the absolute bottom of the barrel where it's you said, I said, you are wrong, we're shouting at each other, and I don't see a single bit of solution on the table. So,
well, speaking of leadership, what has Dr. Bonginko Sinzimande said about this whole thing?
I like the way you used his full name. He said nothing, has he?
Dr. Blade Nzimande issued a statement 2 days ago, and the statement was, university administrations must deal with elements on the campuses that are disrupting and so forth and so forth. Now, for me, it's, well, you call them. There was an element to that statement that sort of said,
business as usual.
Let me put it this way. Dr. Bonginko Sinzimande said in November that if these students continue, don't accept my demands, then students must will. Student, I'll start my own movement. Students must fall. Okay. 3 weeks later, yeah, he was saying, oh, you know, I was just making a joke with my colleagues. I don't know why ENCA put that on the on the thing. So he was apologizing for it. And I worry that there's a sense. I think in the ANC, there is a sense that, oh, you know, they as in these unknown forces, are being either funded by foreign forces or there's a conspiracy and that let's just crush them. This is why Gwedeman Tashe said on Friday at the ANC's March Against Racism to hand over a memorandum to President Zuma that there are meetings at the American embassy to do this. That is why you have Colin Maine saying to the City Press 3 weeks ago that, oh, you know, it's a conspiracy and the intelligence agencies need to investigate these people. So that stops you from saying, I want to reimagine this problem and find a way for us to enter a dialogue that will stop the violence, that will take the sensible people away from the people who just want anarchy out of that system so that we have a clear delineation of we want solutions to the problem and those guys don't want that, then how do we deal with that? And I think that's where the leadership failure comes in.
All right, you got to go. You've got a very busy day ahead. Thank you, Justice.
Absolute pleasure, guys. Always a joy to be here.
We'll always have more to talk about. Maybe next week we'll have to do an hour. We'll see.
Yes.
Justice Malala, The Burning Platform, brought to you by Nando's every Thursday on cliffcentral.com. In a short while, we'll talk to Dr. Bladen Zimande. Listen to me. We'll talk to Tamsin Nell, who works with Anthea. You don't mind being called Dr. Tamsin. You don't mind that. We'll just throw it at you.
No, I'll be a doctor for today.
Yeah, all right. For today, it's fine. But we'll talk some more about the budget, how it affects you, what it means to your bottom line, and also what it means to the markets, because there wasn't really much of a reaction.
No, there yesterday. Wasn't at all.
No, so we'll have to talk about that too. Justice, thank you very much. We'll catch up with you in a week.
Cheers, guys.
There we go.
Burning Platform, fired up by Nando's on cliffcentral.com.